Hey, we're doing 2 hours this week, and who knows what happens next week. It's kind of a fluid situation on Sports on 590 The Fan. But yeah, this week, yeah, we've been 9 to 11 all week. But I'm willing to do 8 hours of radio, because every once in a while I'll hear screaming through my vents, the children with my mother-in-law, and it's just like a chill right down my spine, because I know that's what I'm walking into at 11 o'clock. That's,
you know, you're
happening.
Doing most of those hours solo, right? Like, I don't commit. I'm not a part of the package deal.
We're a team. We're a team, no. Buddy. No, we're in this together. Not. What are you talking about?
I'm not living in your house. I don't got to deal with those kids. I didn't make poor life decisions like you.
No, they were good life decisions, okay? Yeah. I love my kids. I love my little dudes.
Yeah.
I love my little guys. They're good little guys. All right. Brian Burke is here. He's in studio, I believe.
Yep.
Hey, Brian, how's it going? You guys are getting some great guests on Hockey Central. Just want to say congratulations. Like, how involved are you in the guest booking here? Have you gotten to the end of the Rolodex yet?
Well, not yet, but yeah, I'm helping out. It's we've been focusing on NHL coaches and GMs and asking them about their path, you know, how they got to their jobs. And some of the stories are fascinating. Like, Kenny Holland was on yesterday or the day before talking about how he finished playing in the minors. And he went back to Vernon, B.C., and his mother was trying to convince him to become an Electrolux vacuum salesman. And then he got the job, his first job scouting with Detroit. And John Tortorella's first coaching job was coaching Virginia in the Atlantic Coast Hockey League. He made $6,000. So we focused on how people got to their positions in the NHL, and we're having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it's been incredible, the shows you guys have put together. They've been really, really awesome. And not to try to just pump your guys' tires too much, but yeah, it's been lights out guest after lights out guest these last couple of weeks. You guys have found a really good way to continue to create content in a time where, yeah, there hasn't been any hockey. You've mentioned a couple of those guests. Yesterday was Michael Bublé. Is that a you poll? Are you and Michael Bublé friends? That's what everyone needs to know.
Yeah.
What's a hang with Michael Bublé like?
Well, he's a very engaging guy. He's a great guy. He's funny. He's smart. He's friendly. I'll tell you a story about Michael Bublé. I'll give you some background. So when I was running the Leafs, he played what was then the ACC. And my daughter, Molly, was an intern for us for MLSE for the summer. And huge Bublé fan, like everyone is. I mean, who doesn't like Michael Bublé's music? So he called me up and he said, what are you doing? So this is like a 10:30. And I said, what do you think I'm doing? I'm working, not like you. And he said, come on down, we're doing sound check. I said, well, my daughter Molly's here. And he talked to Molly once before on the phone. And I was in Bruce Allen's office, who represents Michael. And Michael called in and Molly was with me and he was on the speakerphone. He goes, hey, Molly. So he said, well, bring Molly down. We're doing sound check. So they're doing the sound check. We go down, and he's riding around the building on these Segways, like a 10-year-old with a little Segway. So then he says, what are you doing for lunch? I said, well, I don't usually eat lunch. And he said, well, come on, have lunch with me. So he sat next to Molly and had lunch with her, treated her like he'd known her all his life. We went to the concert. Afterwards, driving home, and he says, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. Where do you think I'm going? It's 11 o'clock at night, for God's sake. He said, well, you got to come by Soto Soto, which is his favorite restaurant here in Toronto. Really good Italian place. So we go. He's got a private room. Sits Molly next to him. Treats her like they were on a date. He couldn't have been kinder to her. And then Apple was a sponsor of his tour. He gives her an iPad. So this is for being a good kid. And like, this is, he made this, my daughter's, that whole year for her was made in one day by this guy being so kind to her. That's what he does. That's what he is.
That's so awesome. And I think some of our better experiences in this business sometimes are when you do meet people with an immense amount of clout that still just kind of act like normal, everyday, regular people.
And he loves hockey, too. Sorry to interrupt. He absolutely loves hockey. He's a huge Canucks fan. I didn't ask him on the air yesterday. I should have. At one point, he owned part of the Vancouver Giants in the Western Hockey League. I think he still does. But he's a huge hockey fan. He has a small rink in the basement of his house. He plays with his boys every day when he's home.
Okay, so we've mentioned it. You're not at the end of your Rolodex yet. Has there ever been anyone that's reached out to you personally where you were a little starstruck, where you were like, oh, my God, I'm actually talking to this person?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Kim Coates.
Kim Coates. Yeah. Higher than Bublé from Sons of Anarchy. You're a huge Sons of Anarchy guy?
Expecting.
Well, I was sitting here at the desk right outside in the newsroom here in the studio, and he comes around the corner, and I'm like, Jesus, Murphy, it's Kim Coates. And he says to the guy who was walking him through, Jesus Christ, it's Brian Burke. So I'm like, I think this guy's a great actor. So I was kind of starstruck. Like, I watched every episode of Sons of Anarchy twice. And I told him, we sat and visited for about a half hour. He's a great guy from Saskatoon. And I said to him, I said, I'm going to tell you something that you probably don't hear very often. And he said, what's that? I said, I thought you were great in Waterworld. So Waterworld was a movie that critics hated. It was horribly over budget. I really liked it. But the small character, the small part he played perfectly as this psycho pirate dealer guy. And he was great in the movie, even though I wish he'd had a bigger part, but he was fantastic. But that was a thrill for me to meet him.
I'm never going to rap to you again. That's a promise, okay?
Good.
Yeah, that's a promise.
That is good.
I promise I will never rap to you again. But do you want to hear my Jax Teller impression?
Do I have a choice?
No.
Okay.
Dara. Dara. That's the whole season. That's the whole season one. What do you think?
You better keep this job.
I'm trying. I'm really trying hard. This is the best I can do at that. So you guys have Brendan Shanahan on today, which is awesome. Is there one question you have loaded up for him that you're especially excited to hear the answer to?
No, I've known Brendan for many, many years. Again, these little known facts about people. Brendan, my son Brendan, the boy that we lost, he was a huge Brendan Shanahan fan. And when Shanny spent that brief time in Hartford, Brendan Shanahan was the greatest thing since night baseball, right? Like, just in awe of this guy. So he spends his summers outside of Boston. And I had a place in Boston, and I would come up and we'd meet for lunch once or twice in the summertime and have lunch and a couple beers and talk about stuff. But the first half hour, my Brendan would join us, and then he'd go wander around the mall, and Shanny and I would have, like I say, have lunch and talk about what's going on with a couple beers. So I go way back with Shanny. I like him a lot. And I think that's, you know, I think he's, I mean, the team's gotten better steadily since he got here. I've been critical of some of their decisions, and I'm going to continue to be when I feel that way. But it doesn't change my personal admiration for him. And I think it's great that he's coming on. That's one I did not arrange.
Yeah, we'll be listening. Can't wait to hear him at noon coming up after this show. So JD and I, we're going back. We're watching the Raptors playoff run from a season ago, and we couldn't help but notice in game one of the Philly series, Kyle Dubas was in attendance. It was after the Leafs had lost that seven-game series to the Bruins. As a GM, how visible do you want to be in the public space? Like, do you want to be less visible when things are going poorly, or is it the opposite? Like, how visible did you want to be when you were a general manager?
Well, when your team's playing well, you stay out of the way. You let the coach take the credit. You let the players take the credit. And when your team is scuffling a bit, that's when you're around more. And you're around your players more, you're around your coaches more, and you're around the media more. And it's more hands-on when you're scuffling. When you're winning, players don't really want you around. The coach really doesn't want you around. So your best bet is when the team's playing well, that's when you get your scouting in. So the team goes on a little bit of a tear. Say they're going on a road trip for four games out west, that's when you go scout. You go to the Quebec League, or you go to Europe and scout, or go out west and scout. And then what I used to do a lot is meet the team at the end of a scouting trip. So if the team ended up in, say, Florida, and I went to Charlotte, say, or Norfolk when they were still playing in the American League, I'd work my way down there and then go to the last game on the trip and then jump on the bird to come home and save some money. So it saves you a flight back from Miami to Vancouver to Calgary or wherever you're working. So you jump on the bird and save an airfare back. So that's what I would do a lot of times is if the team was on a three-game road trip, four-game road trip, I'd see the final game and come back with them.
Yeah, I'm really ready for sports to come back, obviously, as much as anybody. I love live sports, obviously, dedicated, you know, essentially my professional career to it. But I have enjoyed going back and watching these Rewind games. We've watched, so far, Ben and I, every game from the Raptors run. They've got Blue Jays games on from 92, 93. They've got 2015 Blue Jays games. They've got 93 season Leafs tonight going on. And I would assume that, I don't know, eventually if we keep continuing this trend, we're going to see some games from your era. And I was thinking about your teams this morning, and what do you, so much of the experience of going back and watching these things for me has been, wow, in the moment, everything is so heated and so intense, and you, people have reaction off of what's happening in the moment. And then you look back at these things and you realize that you watch these games with bias, that your memory is extremely flawed, that there are real holes in your viewing experience as a fan, especially in the social media age where, you know, you're trying to fire off an opinion, you know, once every 35 minutes-ish for people of our vintage. If there's one thing you think people got wrong about your teams, what was it?
I actually think the coverage that we got here was largely fair. We weren't very good, and people said that and wrote that. As I said at my press conference after I got hoofed here, I said, this is an age where accountability is vanishing, and I intend to be accountable today. I said, I'm here because the team got sold. But if I had won enough games, the new owners would have had to keep me. So the reason I got let go is I didn't win enough games. And so to me, the one thing that troubled me about it was that I knew that team was playoff ready. I knew we'd finally gotten it right after 4.5 years. We'd finally gotten the right group together. That was the fastest team in the NHL and the toughest team in the NHL. We had the goaltender, and that's what I said when they fired me. I said to Larry Tannenbaum, at least give me the season. This team's going to make the playoffs. And if we don't, then you can fire me. Won't say a word. But they'd already made up their mind, and that's ownership's right. So you say look back on one thing. I think people would forget how fast that last edition was, the one that played the 48-game season and made the playoffs, how fast that team was.
Before we let you go, speaking on the subject of firing and employment changes, if the NHL has no conclusion to the season, do you envision a scenario where there's a little more leniency, where maybe an owner was deciding about, had the thought of making a move either with their general manager or the head coach, and that maybe people get a reprieve here because of the bizarreness of the season?
I don't know. I don't. Some of the newer owners in this league, I'm baffled by why they got involved at all, and if they know what they're doing. But you would hope that, because when I got let go in Vancouver, everyone knew a lockout was coming, and there was a good chance we were going to lose the year. So everyone knew I'd be out of work for a while. No one's going to add a GM salary when they're not going to play. And that's what happened. I was out of work for almost exactly a year. So you would hope that people would be patient here. But my guess is that anyone who's thinking of making a change has already thought it through, and they think they're going to do it or not do it. And a lot of it is musical chairs, right? There's got to be someone to sit in the chair. So guys would say to me, young GMs would say to me, I want to fire my coach. I said, okay, that's plan A. What's plan B? Like, who's coaching your team? And if you don't have a guy you think is better right away, then don't change your coach. So it's not just, do I think my coach is getting the job done? It's, is there a replacement that's an upgrade? Because if there's not, there's no reason to incur the cost of a coaching change.
Well, that leads me to this, is you said it. Most people have made up their minds about what their team is. Who do you think out of every team in the NHL has been losing out the biggest opportunity to find out what their makeup is, or who their coach is, or who their general manager is, in terms of playing out the stretch and actually being able to change somebody's mind or solidify somebody's mind on who they are?
Well, I think that the teams that would be most disappointed are teams that felt they were, you know, if we don't finish the season. And I think it's going to be hard to finish the season, but I like the way the league's doing it and looking at all possibilities. And I still am hopeful that we can. I can't see it. If I had to bet money on it, I would say we're not going to play. But I prefer the guys that say, I think we're going to play. I think there's a way to do it. I'm hopeful that we can do it, obviously. We'd all love to see the season resolved. If the season isn't resolved and a champion isn't awarded, there's going to be several classes or categories of teams that are disappointed. Teams that thought they had a legitimate shot, like Boston, who thinks they got cheated out of it. They came one game short a year ago. St. Louis, who would like to defend. Vegas, who made the most changes or the best changes at the deadline. These are all teams that think they were in the legitimate Final Four, and that's as close as you're going to get, right? And then after that, there's some luck involved and execution and so on. All those teams will be disappointed, but there are a couple other teams like L.A. just went on a 7-game unbeaten streak after a dreadful season. Their coach is riding a good wave. They've got rid of some guys. They're playing really well. They're working kids in. There's going to be a whole lot of disappointed teams. I'm hopeful there won't be a lot of change. I think ownership in pro sports is far too impatient. I think there's way too much change.
Brian, we appreciate the time. We'll be listening this afternoon. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
There's Brian Burke. You can play our new game every weekday morning at 6:40. Here, let me do this read. Every morning, 6:45, you need to be either really good or really bad to win it all. It's called All or Nothing. And like the name says, you need to get it all right or none of it right to win. There will be $100 to untuck it available to win every time. But if we don't have a winner, that $100 rolls forward, adds to the next day's prize. So join us every weekday morning, 6:45, to play All or Nothing. Brought to you by Untuck It. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for All or Nothing contest details.
Listen, perfect time for Untuck It, because who's tucking in a shirt now? Nobody's tucking in shirts anymore. Huge boon for Untuck It in this day and age. Before we go to break, I'll just say that. I get there's something about being realistic about seasons not ending, but I actually do think that's important for people, is to be optimistic that sports will be played and the NHL will come back and be played. I don't really see the point in being in the mindset where you're constantly trying to convince yourself that there won't be hockey. Like, maybe you're doing the prepare for the worst, hope for the best type of thing. That's the mentality I think you need to have with all this. Prepare for the worst, hope for the best. Hope that there still will be hockey games this year. Because I think it's really deflating when you just have people out there, not to be Mr. Tony Robbins, like, oh, how you got to live your life. But just, I don't care if your opinion is just hockey's not coming back. You're stupid for hockey coming back. Count the season over. Call the season. Why? It's April. It's like we're just getting into April. Relax. Let's just pump the tires just a tiny little bit on the people who want to call the NHL season this afternoon. Okay? If you feel that way, fine. Keep it to yourself.
Yeah. It actually kind of reminds me of the people that are like so ready to just talk about how the Blue Jays stink and how the season's over. It's like, who cares? Like, you don't get an award for being the first on this. It's like, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Nobody knows. We don't know. But you're right. And I should do the same thing about Vlad Jr. It's like, you know what? I should think that he's going to be good. He's going to be Mike Trout this year. And then if he's not, okay, that's the reality. But I'm hopeful, and I believe Vlad Jr., when the season gets underway, he's going to be the best thing since sliced bread.